Hi, this is Hugh Greenwood from the North Melbourne Footy Club, and you're listening to another episode of the Hashtag Kangaroos podcast. Here is your host, Dean Basich.
Welcome to another episode. My name is Dean Vasic. You can find me on X at hashtag Kangaroos, Instagram hashtag Kangaroos podcast, TikTok hashtag Kangaroos one. So tonight I welcome back the trio, Mark, Jesse and Frank tonight to go through our disappointing performance against the Brisbane Lions. We talked a lot. Mark went on a few rants about what Alistair Clarkson has said about the direction of the club and what we've been saying. Has it been a bit too, not so much negative, but maybe a bit, we've gone a bit easy on the playing group? Are we setting the standard a bit too low? It was a very long episode. I think we spoke for almost nearly an hour and a half, I should say. So maybe an hour and 20 minutes. I'm not too sure, but I won't hold you up anymore. Let's bring on the boys to chat about it. So welcome back tonight. I've got the trio, Mark, Jesse and Frank. Boys, we have a lot to go through. And obviously a disappointing result again on the weekend. And Mark, I'm going to start with you this week. Now, you just joined us about 20 seconds ago, so you're fresh without warming up. How did you see the game?
I must admit, I was, and I'm not saying this has got any decent basis behind it, but I found it as disappointing as the David Noble period about 2 years ago, where I felt like we were just in quicksand and there was no improvement. I know that's not realistic at all, but that I just felt that way during that first 45 minutes. And I didn't take much comfort from the second half, to be honest. I thought the damage had been done by then. I just thought... And then it got worse over the weekend, watching West Coast and then Hawthorn and some other sides around us put in what perceived to be more effort than us. I know it's not that simple, but... I just felt like the intensity at the start of the game wasn't there. And the ground didn't suit us at all. I'm sure we'll talk about that. But, I just felt pressure index, tackles, just the basic stuff. It just still feels like the players are in survival mode rather than I'll do anything for the team mode to help us win. And I think until that changes, things is going to continue to be a problem. I think we've got this enough talent on the list now for that. And I know there's holes in the back line and everything else, but there's a lack of team-first attitude that I think is still holding us back.
Okay. Interesting start, Mark. I thought I was pretty negative last week, but you've started off a little bit slow today, so that's all right. Yep. I'm still warm into it. Frank, any different thoughts to Mark there, or did you see any positives, I guess?
Look, the one thing I'd say, Dean, is at least our tackle count was up. Up over 80, I think, the effort was there, but I don't think the effort was sustained, and then I think our heads dropped really quickly, and it was pretty evident 15, 20 minutes in that we were completely off the pace, and... that second quarter was as bad as I've seen us play in a long time, just really uncompetitive. A bit like what Mark said, it was sort of going back to some of the horror efforts of a couple of years ago. Just really disappointing.
We need some nourishment.
Oh, yeah. Actually, you know, that's funny you say that, mate. I think that was ringing through my head at some point during that game.
Oh, same.
That famous sort of line that he used to sort of go with.
Well, you know why it's come back into my mind? Because we've now started saying we're looking for evidence that we're improving, which reminds me of the old, those special metrics that came out a couple of years ago.
Yeah, that's right. That's crazy.
It feels like the same sort of narrative again. We're not interested in winning. We're just interested in these little things along the way. And I think, to be honest, that feels like half the problem is like supporters aren't interested in little wins. We're not interested in a narrative that's, you know, don't try and gaslight me into thinking things are going well because you've got these little bits of evidence we're becoming a good side. We are desperate to see you be desperate, and win or loss, we just want to see that same pain and suffering that we've felt for the last 4 or 5 years. And
yeah.
Like, don't sell us stuff that's not going to work anymore. Like, we've had enough of that for 4 or 5 years. Mm. Be a bit more honest about what you're doing to change the way the players are thinking. And because we know he's talking differently to the players behind closed doors. He's not saying to them, don't worry, guys, we're just looking for a little bit of evidence that you're improving a little bit. That they are saying, that wasn't good enough, that wasn't good enough. The intensity dropped off in the second quarter. You're being selfish, you're worrying about your own game, you're not doing enough of the team. So I know that conversations are happening, not in necessarily an aggressive way or publicly shaming them in front of their teammates, but one-on-one with the coaches are saying, you're going to have to think more team first, yourself second. It's not about how many possessions you get. It's about you following the structures and all those sorts of conversations be happening. They're better off not sharing the specifics, but as soon as you start saying, you know, oh, look, we've lost Taron Thomas this year and it's going to be hard with the youngest team in the comp. We already know all of that. We know it's going to be difficult. We're not looking for 12 wins. We're not looking for a final spot. We're looking for 4 or 5 wins, but we want to know that you're not accepting 70-point losses as okay. Mm. I think Charlie Comben was better when he said it hurts us as much as the supporters. Mm. And given he just busted his gut, you know, went down even better with the supporters. But I just think sometimes you're better off being more straightforward than spinning a line that's designed to sort of calm everyone down, because you're not going to be able to calm supporters. If we keep losing by 70 or 80 points and the pressure index is not high enough and the tackle count's not high enough and we're not looking like we're doing everything we can as a team to do it, the supporter base is going to get more and more angry. So they're better off being honest about almost repeat without being specific. You don't have to shame players. I don't ever agree with that. Coaches have to have the players back. But it's okay to say, we don't accept that. This is why we don't accept it. These are the things that are going to be non-negotiable. Hardwick dropped a whole, like, 4 or 5 senior players from the Gold Coast with kids, and he got a response. And I think maybe the club, it's almost time for the club to think a bit the same way.
Well, Jesse, that's all I have for tonight. So, unfortunately...
Thank you.
look. We're going to talk more about that very soon there, Mark, and all are very good points. But, Jesse, I mean, Frank sort of mentioned we had 80 tackles for the game, so that was up. Our pressure rating was high for parts of the game, but we obviously can't sustain it with a young team. Where do you sit in all this after Mark's rant about effort and what they're sort of saying to the public?
Yeah, look, the message coming out is getting a bit tiring, isn't it? Because it's kind of rinse, repeat every single week. They're telling us things that we already know. And like Mark said, we just want to know that you're doing something about it. You don't need to tell us, try and paint a rosy picture of where we're at. We clearly know where we're at. That's not the problem. So, yeah, look, there's an absolute need for them to be harder on players. And look, it was a good point around Hardwick, albeit when you've been gifted with so many good young talent, or at least a wider selection. They've got more ability to bring kids in and apply pressure, mm-hmm. the Gold Coast, just because of how many kids they're able to bring in, especially out of quality because of their, you know, their academy program, which I'm you know, conversation for a different time. But it's just frustrating. I tend to agree. I thought the game on the weekend was the most disappointing this year by far. And I think that comes on the back of the large portions of the game, we were just not, especially the first half, we were non-competitive. And our game style that at least we said, oh, well, you know, from round one till now, our game style seems to have reverted. It looked very much like a David Noble game plan on the weekend, which is none. That's honestly what it looked like. I couldn't see a game style. And, you know, I know we'll touch a little bit more on the ground, but kind of before the game, when I realised what the dimensions of that ground was, I actually thought that was helpless because our wingers haven't been playing fantastic. And our one wood, the one thing that we are strongest about is our midfield, our contested footy. And we got absolutely shown up in that. absolutely shown up in what should have been our strength, which was really, really disappointing. But yeah, look, I take what you said in terms of, you know, our tackles were up. I mean, look, our tackling isn't the absolute worst in the comp, albeit, you know, we are chasing the ball a bit, so it should be pretty well. You know, in terms of differential, we're below the AFL average when it comes to tackles. We're, you know, right down there in tackles inside 50. One thing we are good at is our pressure acts, you know, that, and I think that was really up on the weekend, albeit on a small ground where you've got the ability to apply a bit of pressure, but it didn't help. It didn't help at all. Our defense didn't function, albeit how hard can you really rate them when they're getting that level of supply coming in? It makes it a bit hard. So that's tough. But look, the most disappointing thing for me on the weekend was, again, that the game style just absolutely fell over. And the midfield, for a large portion of it, were non-competitive. And that was the most disappointing thing for me, because that's the one thing that, you know, from a North Melbourne perspective has been what we've been really, really good at this year. I couldn't tell you. I honestly think that there were three players maybe who I thought could have held their heads higher on the weekend. I think there was maybe three, maybe four. Sorry, I'd probably include Sheasel in there. I think there was three others that I thought were good.
Jesse, how did you feel about Clarko bringing up about the fact we missed Taron Thomas?
Oh, I thought that was bizarre.
Yeah.
I don't know why there's any point.
What's the point?
Yeah, I don't see the point of referencing that in term. And to be fair, even if Taron Thomas was out there at the best that we've ever seen him, do you think he's going to affect that result? Gary Ablett, in his first years at the Gold Coast, they were getting creamed by 100 points, and he was winning a Brownlow, and he couldn't affect the result. So Taron Thomas wasn't going to do absolutely anything on the weekend. No player in the league, in the history of the league, would have gone out there and made more than a 20-point difference. We were still going to lose that game. It is not a single player problem.
If he was recovering from a knee, Rico, that would be an embarrassing excuse to bring up.
And you're talking about someone who we've sacked from the club and is past tense.
I just thought that was bizarre.
I thought it was a bizarre comment. So look, I'm extremely disappointed from what I saw on the weekend. Extremely disappointed.
Yeah, Mark, you got me worried here. And there's a lot of it's not just you. There's been a lot of chatter online about how much West Coast and even Hawthorn showed a lot of fight over the weekend. And yeah, like we said, we copped another thrashing. There's no denying that. The game was over probably halfway through the first quarter. I mean, you could see that. We were already about three or four goals down halfway through the first quarter. Now, you made very good points about there's conversations going on behind closed doors compared to what Clarkson says to the media.
Mm.
I don't think there is. I think what he's saying to the media is that he's just accepting that we are too young and inexperienced, that we aren't good enough and we won't be any good for a long time. That's the feeling I'm getting. Well, why wouldn't you just tell the media that, this isn't accepted, we've got to work harder, it's not good enough, we're getting bullied, or anything like that. I mean, you might as well tell the supporters that rather than actually, and giving us hope, rather than just saying, well, we're too young, we're not going to be good.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, I'm repeating myself again, I can't tell the difference between saying we're looking at different metrics to we're looking for evidence that we're going to be a good side. To me, it's exactly the same type of narrative we went down 2 years ago under Noble. We've started up again. It's like we're four odd years in now. You've got to actually start improving, and you've got to do what Hardwick's done. And I know there's differences in the list between Gold Coast and us. But you've got to say, and Ross Lyon's the same at St Kilda. These are our non-negotiables. We are going to play our way or you play in the VFL. And the supporters would go, okay, that's not belting one particular player. That's just saying to the group, you either play as the team within those team rules. If you don't do that, you're not going to play. Whereas for us, it just feels like, nah, it's okay. We're going to make a lot of mistakes. Our effort's going to drop off because we're young. You're telling the group that you're accepting the mistake before it even happens. You're telling them you're accepting lesser effort before it happens all the time. I don't know why you would do that publicly. I'd rather they were softer on them behind closed doors and publicly said, we're not going to cop anything less than this, this, and this is our thing. You don't have to go to the Essendon position of going, we're going to have the Essendon edge, because that becomes embarrassing if you don't sustain it. And, you know, Bomber Boss has blocked me now, so I can't make fun of him about that anymore. But I'm not saying we have to start making bold predictions about how we're going to play, but you can say we've got some non-negotiables, and the guys who don't want to do that will play in the VFL. Whereas we're just saying we've got Clarko, and I'm like, he's coached, you know, 4 premierships, so I'm not telling him what he should do. I'm just talking about it from a supporter perspective on what's hard to listen to. What's hard to listen to is, as you just pointed out, is we're going to be bad for a long time. We just have to cop that because we're young. Or we're just looking for some evidence that we're improving as a side and we're going to get better. And you just have to accept this because we're a young side and these things will happen and we just have to do it for longer and all this sort of stuff. It just sounds like we're being conditioned to accept mediocrity when we already know that. We know we're not going to be playing in the finals, but you're telling us we're going to be worse than that. We're going to be non-competitive, which we've already had for 4 or 5 years. You have to improve and be competitive. 70 points to 100-point losses should no longer be happening. I'm not so angry about the Brisbane game because actually I think that ground was a disaster for us in a lot of ways. Only because of the game plan, because Jesse's right, we should be competitive in close, but we've built a game plan about getting it out and running hard. And that ground's like a soccer ground, so it's pretty hard to for an inexperienced side. I'm not that surprised we copped it against Brisbane. What I hated more was the narrative afterwards, that get used to it. It's going to keep happening because the players will get used to it if you say that.
Yeah.
I just think they're going to have to change the way they think because otherwise it'll just... And Carlton, Melbourne went on... This went on for years with them, same sort of problem. Mm. You just end up accepting it until something... Paul Roos has done it twice. He did it at Sydney and said, you will be a selfless footballer or you do not play here. He did it at Sydney and he went to Melbourne. Clearly, they brought in young talent and stuff like that and they got AFL help just like we are and everything else. But right from the start, he was very clear, you will be defensive, you will play defence first, you'll play team first, and if you don't do that, you don't play in the seniors. And players went out of the club. They turned over heaps of them. Both times, with both Sydney and Melbourne. Sydney's culture's never changed. From the time he came in, it's never changed. Longmire's taken it on. They've got that blood's culture. Everything's team first. And now Melbourne's similar. Melbourne have had issues in terms of their forward line and other stuff, but in terms of the way they play, like, they're unbelievable. They as bad as their culture and all these other things have been talked about last year, their footy culture is amazing.
Mm.
Like, they're all selfless. And you know, Grant Thomas, who is a bit of a nut on social media and is crazy about umpiring, but the one thing I do agree with him on is he keeps saying, clubs that have got players that are in survival mode playing for themselves because they're trying to establish themselves and establish their careers, those clubs will always struggle till they can change the thinking of those players into it's team first, a part of a squad. I do whatever it takes to help the person next to me and I'm second. Until you get that way of thinking, you can't go further. And I think that's our biggest problem at the moment. I can understand it from the players' perspective because so many of them are trying to survive and are set young and trying to establish themselves. But we're going to struggle until we get that part of the game right. And to be fair to Adam Simpson, he's already got West Coast starting to think like that. And they, you know, 2 weeks ago, they were looked a hell of a lot worse than us. And in a short space of time, he's got them having a red-hot crack for each other. I just think... If we get to that point, the supporters will be happy, win or lose.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's the second rant, mate. Sorry.
No, that's all right. There's lots to take in there. And, Frank, we'll go to you. Now, we're very old-fashioned. We grew up in the 90s era, and we've seen a lot of success. Do you think these efforts would be accepted by an old-fashioned coach like Dennis Pagan or even a Danny Laidley, who's very hardened players as well and seem to get the best out of players by probably being hard, maybe a bit too hard, I think. But he got a lot of top 4 finishes and he got us to finals. It seems, like obviously Mark's talked a lot about that we're just accepting this and we're going to be bad, but I mean, it wouldn't have been accepted a number of years ago, and that's what I think a lot of supporters are finding hard at the moment, Frank.
Yeah, I agree, Dean. I think there's some things there that at the moment seem to be questionable, some decisions. I mean, you look at what we finished with four marks in the forward 50 for the entire game. Now, wow. You know, 31 inside 50s with four marks for the entire game. Now, for you and me, Dean, that to me, it says we're screaming out for a second marking target up the forward line to give us a different look. Now, you would think that would happen, if not this week, the following week. And I think where the frustration comes is that there's a number of players, we've named them before, we could name them again this week, that seem to be getting rewarded for very, very mediocre efforts. And I think that's what really frustrates people, is me personally. I would rather see a young kid fail, like a Hardiman or a Maley or whatever, and be exposed, rather than see the same four or five, not veterans, but seasoned footballers go around half-paced.
No, fair enough. Jesse, now, we have Zerha out of contract at the end of the year. I mean, put his football game aside for the moment. And he has said he wants to play finals. Now, Frank and Mark both said last week they don't think he'll be here next year. LDU is out of contract in 2025. He's going to get big offers from rival clubs, and he may think the same thing and think, well, maybe I'll explore my options here because we're not winning games. I mean, Ben Mackay was on his podcast talking about his 10th career win. He's had two in Essendon in four games. That's 20% of his career wins have already come in the first four games at Essendon. I'm concerned that if you don't win games of football and give hope to supporters and your top players, that it will lead to a player exodus. And this rebuild could still be going in another 5 years' time, Jesse, and we could still be having the same conversation in 5 years' time, Jesse.
Oh, look, absolutely. But I guess, like the guys referenced before, the same thing's happened at Melbourne, the same thing's happened at Carlton. Yeah. You know, every club that's down the bottom has, you know, players who leave because they chase success. But you can't have that continuously happen, and you need to draft well. And the other thing I would say is those two, less to a degree Melbourne, but they are to a degree big clubs within there is a pool. I mean, Melbourne were able to get, you know, May and Lever in, like a pretty decent in that bolstered their team when they required a backline.
Make a difference.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference. So I think from the perspective of, are players going to leave? Is that going to keep us down the bottom? I mean, it's a bit of a catch-22, I suppose. In terms of Zerha, based on his form this year, I'm actually not that concerned. That's with me being blunt. I don't think he's played well at all. And then you got Clarko last week saying we're really enjoying what we get out of Zerha. What are you getting out of him? Because I haven't seen it. But in terms of...
Which bit is he enjoying?
Well, I honestly don't know. I couldn't tell you.
No, I know. Yeah, it's interesting. Like, he's obviously talking him up, but I'm not too sure if he's trying to boost his confidence by saying things like that publicly, but it's very quiet over the weekend. So I'm not so sure what that noise is in the background there, but is someone outside?
Yes, I'm in the garage. It's pouring.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I can hear some sort of rattling there, but might be raining on our podcast at the moment. It's obviously, but Mark, we might as well talk about some positives. Charlie Combin, 25 disposals, 8 marks, 13 intercepts, 386 metres gained. I thought he was fantastic in that second half. Looked like Darcy Moore there particularly in the last quarter. Really took some intercept marks. I think he looks like a real promising prospect. And I liked that he was hurt after the game in his interview. He looked genuinely hurt, that he was really disappointed about the team's performance. How did you see him?
Oh, well, you know I love Charlie. I mean, there's two or three at the club that I think represent where we want to be in the future, and I think he's one. I think Wardlaw's another. Obviously, Sheasel's another one. I'm waiting for Finbar Malley to come into the side. my call before the season was that he'd be the shock of the season. I still think that'll be the case because I think he's got some X factor that we need, and he's got size. And I want to see Archer in that side for a similar reason, not because he's got X factor, but I think he's got some toughness and defensive nous that we're lacking in the back line. I think our back line thinking is too much about how we want to move the ball and less about stopping the opposition forwards. And we're leaking that many marks in our defensive half, I should say. But yeah, Chom's efforts were fantastic, and better still, he got better as the game went on. So he's only going to improve from there. I think he could be just as effective forward or back, albeit the injuries he's had probably means it's a good thing to keep him back for a while, at least till Lowe comes back into that side. But yeah, look, he might be our Darcy Moore for the next decade. But he's athletic, he's tough, he's a great team man, loves the club. He's one of the better people, and that better people we've got that at that place. And he was terrific the way he spoke after the game as well. The way he managed, he's around supporters and everything else. I think he's a great leader at the club in a different sort of way. And I think he's a very important glue between the supporters and the playing group. So I think a lot of people were very, very happy for him. And that was it. That was the number one positive out of the game, apart from, you know, and Cherry, you could add him into that as well with his level of effort. But, yeah, I think there's a few we can be really happy about, but the overall's obviously dark. But, yeah, Chom was awesome. I was rapt for him.
Yeah, look, I mean, he looks like a player that could be the number one defender. Yes. And it'll make Callum Dawson a better player as number two. Frank, Aiden Corr, 16 disposals, 6 intercepts, seemed to play on the small forwards like Charlie Cameron. Obviously, I thought his first half was pretty ordinary, but I thought his second half was okay, or it was better. Not that it could have been any worse than the first half. Do you see him as a player that could play on a small forward, that could be a lockdown defender in that regard?
Well, not in the opening 90 seconds, Dean. I didn't. I thought I couldn't believe that he let Charlie Cameron get back on the inside, and I thought he is in for a long day. But look, considering
it was like Nolan chasing around Usain Bolt, that's what it looked like.
Yeah, well, considering the amount of ball that went in there and the dominance they had in the first half, and the fact that I think Charlie Cameron got his second possession in the last quarter, I thought he stuck at it, and he certainly did a better job than some of the others down there. So I was pretty critical of the entire back line at quarter time. Half time, I hadn't changed my opinion. But I will say that along with Compton, he kept working, and he fought his way back into the match. So I thought he did a good job on Cameron, a really good job. Seeing as where it started and where I thought it was going, I thought he did a good job.
Yeah, I agree with that. So it might be his role from now on. Jesse, there's a lot of talk about Luke McDonald and a lot of supporters calling for him to be dropped. At 14 disposals, been back for 3 weeks. I don't think he's set the world on fire, but I don't think he's done much wrong. I'm not too sure. Like, I think he's just been there, to be honest with you. I don't think he's been terrible or anything like that. Have you seen him?
No. What you just said, I think it's a fair summation. It's almost like he's just being there. I wouldn't say that he's doing. If we're calling, the only thing I would call for his head on is lack of leadership. And, you know, there were some mistakes that you just can't be having, some easy mistakes you can't be having from one of your captains. That's the thing that I think frustrates supporters. But if you're basing it on, you know, him being the worst on ground, he wasn't the worst on ground. I wouldn't even have him in the bottom five, probably.
No.
Who was the worst on ground?
You know what? Bailey Scott's kicking.
His handball was just as bad.
His disposal, and I'm not saying, you know, it was a one. I'm going to say it's a once-off, but his disposal was one of the worst games I've seen of a player in a long time. He was pretty bad.
Put that down to the Norwood over.
I think his player rating was like -5 or something, which I don't know if I've seen that this year, but that it was pretty bad. Yeah, look, there was a couple shockers. There was a couple players who just didn't do
anything. How did our wingman go?
We have wingman. I mean, Dylan Stevens, albeit got knocked out, had five, and then how many did Tucker have? I don't even know. Did he play it?
19.
Jeez, I don't even know if I saw it. No, you know what? Tucker was on. Honestly,
was, yeah, he was okay.
He was okay again. One of those ones who people just keep calling for their heads because they're not really doing anything. And look, I 100% agree on that. But I think there's some other senior players who I'd be targeting first if I was trying to make a bit of a statement. And it probably wouldn't actually be those two, which is interesting because
might be a couple of half forward flankers.
Yeah, I'd be targeting them, to be honest. Because, you know, I've been very strong on not having Tucker on the side and I don't see the value in it. I've also been strong on, you know, McDonald and what his best spot is. And I think if Bergman and Goda were both fit, McDonald probably doesn't play for mine.
And Archer.
Yeah, well, and Archer at full fitness, I'd rather see him get a crack at it. So the thing is that, you know, there's some players there who need a real hard look at themselves. And we need to force them to have a look at themselves because at the moment they're just coasting and they know they're not going to get, you know, they're not going to get anything. You know, there's no threat of them losing their position because.
Yeah, well, we don't know who's available to come in either. We've got the depth to cover them. We don't have players screaming to come back in. So, yeah, we'll talk about the half forwards pretty soon. But, Mark, Colby McKercher, now, had a career low of 13 disposals. I actually just looked at Bailey Scott's turnovers, had 10 turnovers for the game, which is more than anything close to combined in his previous three games. But we'll go to Colby McKercher, 6 turnovers as well in 13 disposals. Was pushed more into the midfield in stages of the game, 54% centre bounce attendances. Mark, where would you like to see him? He's showed a little glimpses in the midfield that he can break a line and he's got a bit of pace. Or do you still want to persist with him on the half-back, back pocket line?
I prefer to see him on a wing, personally, where he can use his pace and not have the battering that will come from centre-bounce attendances. I mean, he would only weigh 70 kilos, I'd say. So that's going to be hard for... I don't mind him getting experience in there because... as he progresses, that's where he's going to play more and more. But I wouldn't be playing him there too often this year. That was a strange game to play him in that position, given the size and the. You're talking about some big boys in that Brisbane midfield. So that you know, when you're talking about Simkin and LDU, Wardlaw's a big boy, even though it's only his second year. He's got tree trunk legs. He can look after himself in there. McKercher's like, he really is 70 kilo, very light, super quick, great runner. But yeah, centre bounce attendances, that's hard yakka for him. So I don't know. It makes me just think, I hope Phillips finds form so I can get him back in there and to play that type of role. But yeah, I'd rather see him on the wing, to be honest. I mean, I don't mind him off half back. I wouldn't mind him off half forward, playing high half forward, running hard. But I personally, he just looks like he's the perfect fit in the wing because he can still help run the ball off the back line. He can also deliver it into the forward line. His kicking's superb. And obviously, with the wider grounds, I mean, this week's going to be interesting because it's not much wider than Broad. At least they've had some experience on a ground that doesn't suit us. I don't think it suits our game plan, a really skinny ground like that. I thought we'd be in trouble this week for that reason, but I didn't think we'd be in that much trouble, you know, halfway through the first quarter, and the game almost over by halfway through the second quarter. So you'd hope we've come up with some plans this week against Geelong and learned some lessons where we can be some bit more competitive. But yeah, I mean, there's a few of those guys, the wingers, the halfbacks and the half forwards really struggled on that Norwood Oval. Almost none of them played well, apart from Sheasel as usual, got his normal 35 possessions. The guy's a freak. But Scott, the two half forward flankers, they all, the wing two wingmen, albeit at least Tucker got a bit more of the ball, but they all seem are running sort of outside players sort of struggled. So they didn't cope with that being forced into the centre and that heavy congestion against, they were much bigger bodies than us. So it was always going to be tough, but it didn't feel like we came with a plan that worked.
Mm. No, definitely didn't. I don't know if we had much of a plan, to be honest with you, like Jesse mentioned earlier. Frank, Tristan Sherry, he's averaging 8 tackles a game this year. Really stepped up his game. Had a great first quarter. Probably faded after that a little bit. I think he had 5 possessions and 7 tackles. Finished with 9 possessions and 9 tackles. So still a pretty good game. I've been impressed with his competitiveness around the contest. And I think he's coming, might even be leading our clearances for the year at the moment. Yeah, have you been just as impressed with him?
Absolutely. Yeah, he's been terrific. And that was probably one of the categories that I was fearful of going into the year was, could he step up to fill that breach left by Goldstein? I think he's been fantastic. His efforts there, and that's all you could really ask, as we were saying at the start of the show, supporters want to see effort. And you can look at Cherry and see he might not be taking, he's not Max Gorn and taking marks up around the forward line and dropping back as much, but you can see the intent is there to protect the smaller players. He follows up after the hit outs and tries to clear the ball himself. I think he's been outstanding.
He's almost our most important player. If he got injured right now with Callum Coleman-Jones out for the season, we're in all sorts.
Yeah.
I mean, player we can't afford to lose is him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Probably him and Larky at the moment.
Yeah, Larky would be the other one. And probably Coleman now as well.
Yeah, he's probably our most important defender at the moment. So that's how well we're going. Jesse, Dylan Stevens, 5 disposals, fumbled a lot. Subbed out halfway through the third quarter, and rightfully so. He was terrible. He's been a really disappointing recruit after a promising preseason, hasn't he?
Oh, 100%. He hasn't done anything this season. I think there's been one game that he was okay.
He was okay against Carlton.
Yes.
Yeah, he was okay.
Carlton, he was okay, and I think the rest of the games he's been below par. It hasn't worked, and this we've gone on about this at length. The decision to continue to play Scott on the half back line instead of playing him in a third position, it's been bizarre. It's just absolutely been bizarre. And the thing that's the most frustrating is that we're crying out for people to actually play the wing position. And I think we all know that Scott plays that position well. Like, Stevens just is not finding – he's just not finding the ball. It's just as simple as that. He's not finding the ball when he does – he's not doing a lot with it.
Is Curtis Taylor's going to end up coming back into the side in that position?
When he went down on the weekend, they ended up playing Eddie Ford off the wing for a bit, I saw.
Yeah.
And I'd prefer that. At least you've then got someone who I know will give it a crack. And because the others aren't at this point in time.
I don't mean that disrespectfully for Curtis Taylor by saying that at all. I mean, Curtis Taylor's worked really hard when he has played in that role. His only issue has been lack of speed, but at this point, the way it's going, when Curtis Taylor's fit again, he'll come back in.
I'm not too sure about that, to be honest with you. He seems to be on the outer a little bit.
That was because they recruited Stevens, who's playing the way he's playing. So I'd rather he was on the outer, but I'm beginning to wonder now. I reckon at least you know what you're going to get with Taylor. I don't know what I'm going to get with Stevens at the moment.
It's a bit bizarre.
Not ideal, I agree.
Yeah, it's bizarre because I think he had a really good preseason and showed a bit. I thought he was going to be a really good recruit. And I don't know, Jesse, I don't know what's happened to his it's obviously a lack of confidence. But even when he seemed to fumble everything, like he just looked like a park footballer out there.
He did. And that, especially when you're playing that wing position, there's almost a... it's almost a requirement that you're able to use the ball with a certain level of skill. It's just so key. And look, it hasn't worked so far this year. It just has not worked at all. To the point you just made as well around Tristan Sherry and leading the clearances, that is correct. He's averaging over averaging over one more clearance a game than LDU and 2 more than the next highest. So clearance game has been elite. He's also averaging the most tackles of anyone in the team by some, if you don't include Greenwood's on the weekend, and Greenwood was monstrous with his tackle pressure, especially up forward. Tristan's averaging two and three more than the next highest, realistically.
That's not a skill thing, though, is it, boys? That's an attitude.
No, that's purely that is purely and utterly attitude. Is the fact that his pressure acts are up, his tackles are up, his tackles inside 50 are still pretty good, and he doesn't even go in there that much. His clearances are good, and he's getting better at stoppage clearances. Originally, it was just all centre clearances. The only thing at all, in terms of his win percentage of winning the only thing he's got to work on is when he wins the ball in the actual ruck, so the ruck craft, is his hit-outs to advantage is still quite low. But that's not – it is what it is. At the end of the day,
that's a skill
thing, and we'll have to find out if he's able to learn that or not.
So why can't Cam Zerha
apply the same amount of effort?
Tackles, four or five tackles in our forward line.
Well, if I was Alistair Clarkson, I'd be pulling up Tristan's stats and say there's a lot of people in this team who think that they're going to get by skill alone. And realistically, you have someone here who is – what I would say, absolutely highlighting the need for effort and attitude. And you know what? Greenwood is a very mixed case. I know some people don't want him in the side. Some people do. I've been wishy-washy on it as well.
People won't want him in the side from lack of effort.
No.
I mean, can't criticize. I mean, to be fair to Luke McDonald, no one's going to criticize him from lack of effort.
Oh, no, of course not.
So, I mean, that's why he's, you know, captain and why he's in the leadership group. He's got deficiencies that are a concern, but they're not the people we should really be critical of, and nor should be critical of the guys playing their first or second season. It's a lot of the guys that are 23 to 25 that are not doing these things. They're not leading by example to the other guys to give them the confidence to do the same thing. If there's guys 23, 24 playing for their position in the side, doing the right thing by themselves and not as much by the team, why are the 18, 19-year-olds going to do anything different? Sheasel's a completely different example. And even he criticizes himself and says, I've pulled myself up when I haven't done the team thing a few times. I mean, that's why he's in the leadership group. It's not because he's perfect. It's because his awareness of when he hasn't done the right thing is so good. He talks about it publicly.
Yeah. I completely agree.
That's where that club's got to get to. For us to get to where we want to go, the people like Cam Zerha has got to think like a second-year player like Harry Sheasel instead of demanding the club make finals for him to decide whether he'll stay there or not. I mean, and one's signed till, you know, how long's Harry there till? He's there till 2029. While the other one's saying, you better do this for me or I might have to leave. Like, That's the problem for me, you know, and a lot of the thinking. The Wardlaw and Sheasel are only thinking about what they can do to get the club to where it needs to get to. And we've got these, you know, I don't know the way Stevenson thinks, but it looks to me like Stevenson and Cam Zerha are going, well, everyone needs to play well to help me play well. Like And that's an oversimplification, but if you just think about some of the words that have been coming out recently, it's not hard to feel that way about it, including from the coach. I just think they need to change the thinking a bit about it. It's about where the club is going as a group and about being more unconditional about some of these things. In the same way, everyone was scoffed at Ross Lyon coming back into the AFL again. Now he's, of course, lauded as super coach of St Kilda, because he's so good at demanding nothing less than unconditional team play. And if you don't do it, you don't play. Mm. And he gets it from those players. And we've just seen the premiership coach go from Richmond to Gold Coast, drop five senior players. And yes, they've got a lot of talent on their list, but so have we. And he brought in people for their first games and got the result. I think we've got to have some selection integrity. And if guys aren't doing exactly what they should be doing, no matter whether they're a Zerha who are free agents at the end of the year or not, he's going to go, Don't worry about it. Make tough decisions.
Exactly.
And if we lose this week because of it, so what? We've lost four games in a row anyway. How much worse can it get? Like, make a statement. If it means Sellers plays, it means Malley plays, it means Drury plays, it means Archer plays,
good. Let's have a crack and see what happens. I think supporters have had enough of just hoping we're going to improve. They want to see effort to improve. And if they fail in that, okay. But they can't handle the status quo all the time. That's what's driving everyone mad, I think.
Mm. Yeah, very fired up Mark tonight, that's for sure. Frank, I'm not so sure if you're still with us. Are you still there, Frank?
Yes, I'm still here, mate. That's I'm still here.
I don't think you've said a word for about 12 minutes. So
it's just like being married.
Now, Frank, LDU, averaging 27.8 disposals per game, career high with 6.5 clearances a game. The problem here is disposal efficiency for the year is at 69%, which is a career low, and turnovers has gone up to 6.5 a game. It might be the way we're playing as well. It might be just trying to take on the corridor a bit too much. As a lot of people sort of think that he seems to be coasting. How have you seen his year so far? I think he's been okay, but I think he needs a bit more help in the midfield.
Yeah, well, on the weekend, his disposal efficiency was 52%. So he turned over literally every second disposal. Again, the effort's there, Dean. So that I think is the big issue. If he wasn't, I'd rather him get the amount of possessions he's getting and turning them over rather than having 12 at 100% effectiveness, because at least he shows he's in there, he's getting it, he's getting contested ball. His disposal's never been elite, but I think maybe the narrow ground and the fact that it was such a contested game probably didn't give him that space to expose his leg speed and his ability to find space. So like the others, I'm probably not super concerned with the weekend's game because of where it was played and the manner that it was played. But yeah, I'd love him to get up around 75 to 80% disposal efficiency. Sometimes I think Dean, he seems to overkick the ball. Like he really sort of, he doesn't sit back and relax. He seems to try to kick the cover off the ball sometimes. Maybe you're right, with a bit of help around him, maybe space starts to open up and he gets that extra half second to for poise and balance. But look, he's not my biggest concern, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, no, I don't think he is either. Jesse, Liam Shields came on as a sub. He did okay, actually, 12 disposals, 3 tackles. I kind of know your feelings towards him, based on what you said in the preseason, that he probably shouldn't be playing. But is it a case of just needing some experience out there to help out the young guys? Is that why he's probably in?
I think Clarko's defaulting to that. Yeah, my thought process is that, is that precisely that Clarko's going, oh, well, we're struggling, I'm going to go back to the thing that I trust and that I know, which is, he knows exactly what he's going to get from him. So, look, you're absolutely right. He wasn't the worst. He played a role. The question always is going to be, is there someone else in the side? The one thing I will say is in the VFL side at the moment, while there's some key players that we absolutely would want in the side, like Salas, and that we've called out that we want him in the team, there's probably a... To the role he's playing, which is an outside player, it's not playing in the guts, it's a bit of a flanker, a bit of everything, not looking for him to excel, add some leadership. Who comes in and gets his role? Because he really came in for Lazaro. So unless you're going to play someone who's an outsider, or you're prepared to play, Scott in a different position, etc. What was weird with me is they played him as sub, which I'm all for, but surely you would have had him tag. He could play a tagging role. Someone had to go to Neil in the first half. Had they not tagged him out, he would have had 45 disposals. I don't necessarily mind them having Shields in the side. If you've balanced your list properly. And my thing there would be, we can't drop all of their senior players. We've got to have a balance. But... and that's all good and well, but then you can't be playing some of these other blokes who are not performing at all and then be playing Shields and then not giving a kid a spot. I'd rather a kid get a spot, at least play the oldest bloke on the list who may not 100% perform, but it's going to give you leadership, compared to some guys who are meant to be in the prime of their career who are doing absolutely nothing.
Mm. No, that's that's totally understandable, and I agree to, in that regard too. So, yeah, it's I mean, I guess like you said at the start, he goes to his default, a player he sort of trusts and has been there with him at Hawthorn and won premierships, and I don't think it's a long term solution at the end of the day. Mark, we'll go through the forward line now. The biggest problem with me, and I talked about this last week, the imbalance of this. Forward line is really imbalanced at the moment. We've got Jaden Stevenson, who does his best work inside 50 metres. I haven't seen him really nice with you. He's been pushing up the wing half back line. Eddie Ford, similar Zane Burstner, Paul Burstner, Blackie, Cameron Zerha. Well, this goes on and on. We seem to have all the same forwards that do their best work inside 50, but we can't fit them all in. To me, that's a big concern, because we're pushing players like Zane Burstner to the half back line. Eddie Ford's getting picks up the ground, and Stevenson, like I mentioned, getting picks up the ground. He doesn't do his best work there. I think there's got to be a couple of those players who've got to start getting squeezed out, just for team balance.
Yeah, I totally agree. That rain's getting very heavy.
I don't know if it's raining or Frank, to be honest with you.
Is Frank literally standing out right in the middle of it outside, or?
No, I'm in the garage, Mark, but she's hammering down out here.
It sure is. I think you've got a flood. You've got some flash flooding about to happen.
Yeah. Well, we can't all live on along the beach there, Mark.
I tell you what, there's been some rain here for the last 3 weeks. It's been I agree with what you say. Stevenson, Zerha, Curtis, Dersma. They're all very similar. So there's not really a small pressure forward in that forward line in a traditional sense. No. Hence, Greenwood comes in as a second key forward and lays more tackles than anyone, which is a bit of an indictment in terms of that situation we're in. So I think either Drury or Hanson Jr. will possibly get tried this week. If not, it'll be soon. They can't. They're going to have someone that he'll play shortly, and they probably have to keep looking at recruiting someone, a small forward who can do that for them going forward in the future, as well as obviously we're looking for key defenders and key position players going forward. But yeah, we haven't had a gun small forward in the true sense of the word for a very long time, and we don't have a second key forward either. So Larky's sort of in a terrible situation. He's got no one helping him out. Either Malley or Sellers has to play this week, or we'll have to start questioning the sanity of the selection panel. I just don't see how they can't have someone. When the ball gets kicked in there long, you can't have it kicked on Larky's head, and he have no support in the air. Apart from those guys, Zerha's not doing a good job in the air to help him out at the moment. You can't expect too much from Dersma. He's too... He's probably, again, another 70-kilo guy. He's about 6'3", but he's only 70 kilos, very thin. Mm-hmm. Very clever in the air. He's got great wingspan. He's going to be a great mark. But he's a third or fourth man on the forward line who is good on the ground, good in the air. Curtis is similar. Ford is similar. And Braden George is going to end up being similar. Yeah. So there's a whole shitload of them. So the more Zerha says he wants to play in finals and carries on like that, the more I go, well, okay, well, then you might have to move on then, because we've got about five other players playing a similar type role. And Stevens is not that different, albeit he's got speed, but he doesn't seem to be using it as much as he could be at the moment. So he feels a bit out of place and lost. I think you're right about him being deep forward in the past is where he's done his best work, and he's not really getting to play that type of role. So instead of trying to squeeze everyone in that is of similar height, similar type of role, they're going to have to squeeze a few out and put in some players that gives us better balance. I 100% agree with you, Dean.
Yeah, I'd like to see Sellers, Greenwood and Larky as your three tools. I'd like to see a couple of half forwards and a couple of small forwards just getting a bit more balance, because at the moment it's just too much of a same player inside the forward 50. Frank, I've... Got Mark's thoughts on Cameron Zerha. What do you think of him? He's averaging 15 disposals a game, which is all right at the moment. 10th in the league for tackles inside 50, but only 4 goals for the year, though. He seems to be coasting through games at the moment, and maybe he's not fully focused. Similar to Ben McKay last year, had some weird games where he wasn't fully focused. But he's got to find a way, doesn't he? He's got to put the contract thing aside, and he's got to help his team and contribute a lot more, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great example. He does remind me a lot of Ben McKay's year last year, where he sort of fades in and out of games. Sometimes he just goes missing for an hour. You forget he's out there. Yeah, whether it's weighing on him or not, look, I don't think it's doing him any favours either way, because if he's hankering for a 5-year deal on his current performance, I don't think anyone's going to offer him a 5-year deal. I think
we already have.
Well, I mean, outside of us and, you know, Mark, and how genuine is that? I mean, I haven't heard anyone from the club come out and say that we've offered him a 5-year deal. I've heard speculation in the media, but at this stage, if he trying to get the interest of other clubs, of rival clubs, he's not going about it the right way. So
I'll tell you, Frank, when the club comes out, which will be our list manager, comes out and says we've offered him 5 years, we're very keen to talk about it with him, which is what happened with McKay last year. Once they say that, that means they know he's not going to re-sign.
Yep.
And they're trying to get his value up. So once we hear them say that we're putting something in front of him, we're really keen for him to commit, we'll know that he's not going to commit.
Yeah, yeah. But look, I'd like him to stay. I am, as I said last week, I don't know currently that I'm comfortable with a 5-year deal, particularly not on what his output is. But he's just got to do more. And I think the most frustrating thing is as we were saying at the start of the program, it's all well to come out and give us supporters lip service and say, I'm sick of losing and I want to play finals. But when you're directly contributing very little to the cause, it frustrates supporters.
Well, I mean, imagine how we'd feel if Harry Sheasel said that. You'd be devastated, absolutely devastated. But instead, he goes, I know where we're heading. I've signed up for the long term. It's going to be hard for a while, but we're going to stick together and we know where we're going to end up. I'm excited by it. It's the complete opposite of I'm sick of losing. We'll see if we play. Well, hopefully we'll play finals this year because I want to play finals. So I won't be signing up until I see how things go. Like, once you say that, you may as well just say, I'm out of here. That's the way it comes across to me as a supporter. I'm not speaking on behalf of anyone else but myself when I say that.
Yeah.
But when I hear that, I just go, you've got no commitment any longer. I'm not saying he's done the wrong thing in the past. I'm just saying, to me, that says I'm giving myself an out by saying, unless I see huge improvement and we're heading towards the finals, I'm out of here and I'll sign a big deal money-wise to go somewhere else. I just find that, I don't know. I'd rather he said nothing at all.
Yeah, I agree. Or do what Sheasel's done and put the runs on the board and then come out after round 5, you know, and sort of say, look, I want us to win. I want to play finals. Because then at least supporters can go, well, he's doing his bit. You know, he's busting his guts. He's getting 30 disposals a game.
That's right. Sheasel's won the best and fairest in his first year and signed on, not knowing whether we're going to be playing finals for years. And so he's committed himself to that. He's taken a huge risk, albeit I'm sure we're looking after him financially.
Yep.
But you talk to Wardlaw and he and those guys, Powell's just signed on for another 2 years. He's had nothing but losses since the time he started there. And F all development as a player. He's done it all on his own. He's got some good development this year and it's now starting to show and he's being looked after a lot better, getting midfield time. But I can't cop this, oh, well, I want to see us play finals. You know, I'm sick of not playing. Like, mate, you're part of the problem.
Yeah.
You can't you've never had one consistent year where you've kicked 40-plus goals in a season.
Yeah.
Or come top three in the best and fairest. Like, what are you – like, I just find it very frustrating. It's up to him. It's his personal choice.
I'd just rather than say that, keep it to yourself and then make your decision at the end of the year. He's got every right to do whatever he thinks is best for him in the long term. He's got to look after his own best interests. But I just find that really hard to deal with. I didn't like Mackay's attitude. I don't really like his. I'm biased anyway. But if he's not committed, if they have put a five-year deal in front of him and it's a legitimate five-year deal, which is more than fair, we're 3 weeks in since they've done that apparently. If he's not looking like signing and he's playing the way he is, I go, mate, whether you're here or not next year, you're going to contribute this year or you're going to play in the VFL.
Mm.
Like, we've got enough players of your size running around doing the same thing. It's like, if you want to go to Essendon or back to WA, go for it. Like, we've got to move on as a club. We can't be scared of players leaving. Like, the Jason Horne-Francis thing was a debacle because we spent the whole year pandering to him, terrified he would leave. He left anyway. It was embarrassing in the end. Like, we've just got to say, this is the values of the club. You either want to be here or you don't want to be here. Either way, we're moving forward. And like, and that's why we shouldn't be talking about bloody Taron Thomas and being, you know, oh, we had Taron Thomas still with us. You know, that's been really tough for it. Like, God's sake, he's not... If he'd done a knee injury, you wouldn't talk about it. So don't mention him. He's gone. He'll probably be at Geelong next year. Bad luck. We're going to have to move on from it. There's no point worrying about it.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to bring him back. Unfortunately, it didn't work out. Yes, it's disappointing. But you know what? It is what it is. Let's just forget about it.
You move on with it. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well, we've had Ben Cunnington that was at the peak of his career and got cancer. And unfortunately, that probably hurt David Noble a lot more because he was going to be a linchpin of their rebuild. But,
Great point.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, things happened. And, you know, I think Ben Cunnington would still be playing AFL football and probably still be going pretty well and would be helping at LDU. So, yeah.
100%.
It is what it is. Yeah. Jesse. Hugh Greenwood, 12 disposals and a goal, 7 tackles, ranked 1 in a comp for tackles per game inside 50. So that's pretty good. It looks like we'll persist with him for a while, I think, for leadership, if anything else. And as a pressure player inside 50 who can pinch hit in a ruck, I think that's his role. He's not going to win your games or anything like that. Like, he's not going to kick 5 or 6 in a game. But he can play a valuable role, can't he?
Oh, absolutely. The one thing he adds to the team and is effort. He comes in there. He's the only player who actually applies pressure and tackles inside 50, which is sad given that he's definitely not the fastest. And one thing that I will say, since the day that he's been at the club, he has showed on-field leadership, off-field leadership. Yeah. When he's not playing AFL, if he is playing AFL, he shows that type of leadership around the club. He seems to be the type of guy that everyone loves being around. He's showing more leadership than our captains at the moment.
He's the guy that he probably fills that Shields role better than Shields can play it. If that makes sense.
See, I agree. I agree with that. So look, any thought that he is the second, you know, the second main forward is crazy talk. There needs to be another key forward in that team. He can play in the team with two other key forwards. There's no issues with that whatsoever. I think the main thing is that he should be in the team. I think that he should be in the team because he's adding leadership that we're just dearly missing and we're not getting from the people who are meant to be our leaders. And like you said, the tackle pressure is fantastic. It shows what type of effort you actually have to be applying to be in that position. He's showing what is non-negotiable from a football player. So, look, I can absolutely appreciate the fact of him being in the team. Would you rather play all these kids? Yeah, but not if they're not going to tackle.
No,
that's exactly right. So yeah, I mean, yeah, we'd love to play, you know, all these forwards that all inside the forward 50, the Stevensons and so forth, but you can't do it. So yeah, and at the end, apply the pressure that Hugh Greenwood can do. So yeah, I can certainly understand that he is getting a game, and yeah, I'm a bit surprised they probably waited an extra week to pick him. To be honest with you, I thought he would have come in. for Callum Coleman-Jones. Obviously, he got injured, but I thought he would come in for Good Friday. So, yeah, I think he'll play a role for at least the next few weeks. Mark, we've talked a lot tonight, but what are you hoping to see against Geelong this Sunday? Outside of probably a 10-goal loss, you'd have to think it'll probably be 10-plus goals. realistic.
Yeah, no. Doesn't give me a lot to look forward to this weekend. You're probably right. Cameron and Hawkins on their forward line. Stengel on their forward line. There's a few concerns for us given what's happened in the first four rounds. I don't know how they're going to match up against their forward line, but that'll be interesting for us how they can go. It'll be curious to me. I don't think Corr's the right move in terms of playing on Stengel this week. He's 195 centimetres, so we're playing him as a key defensive player. And as much as we kept Cameron reasonably quiet, I think they took over 20 marks inside their forward line, Brisbane last week. That was almost a record. We can't have that happening. And that was with Comyn playing well, so... that's what I'm looking forward to this week, is to start to see something work in the back line to reduce marks inside our 50. Because until that happens, we're just going to keep getting smashed. You can't keep letting 20 marks happen inside your 50. Because we've actually been scoring okay this season outside of what's been happening in our own defence. So the balance between what we want to do with our ball movement, the north ball thing, and just being leaking wide open in our own defence. I just want to start to see that improve. I want to see our pressure index equal to that of Geelong, if not better. And I want to see our tackle count equal to Geelong, not if not better. And I'm not talking about the last 40 minutes of the game, because I think the last half of the Brisbane game disguised what went on in the first 45 minutes when we got slaughtered in all those things. And then we came good to a certain extent the last half. It was long, long gone by then. It's junk. It's almost junk time to a certain extent. I just want to see intense pressure around the ball carrier from our perspective and tackle count high. If we do that and we seem to have a better system in the back line, in terms of at least preventing the ball being marked in the air, I think we've just got to... That's been a problem for the last two or three weeks. I think we have to find a way to... I'm not blaming the back line, by the way, entirely for that. Clearly, the midfield and the half-forwards are going to play a role in protecting... When we turn the ball over, we have to be better at defending it. So if you're going to play an attacking game, you've got to be far more disciplined when you do turn it over and work a bit harder. So, and that's what... obviously what the coaches have been saying. That is true, but... Yeah, that's all I can hope for this week, mate. I'm not hoping for a win. I'm just hoping for if we're in it up till three quarter time, I'll be super happy. That'd be an awesome result.
Yeah. Oh, look, we'll see how we go. One quarter at a time, Mark. Frank, are you hoping for a boil over this week or anything different to Mark?
No, no boil over. I'd like to see a bit of a different look to that forward line, Dean. I think. Four marks inside 50 for the game. There's something fatally wrong there at the moment with our setup. So I'd like to see Sellers get a go. And look, if it doesn't work, but just going out with the same front six week after week at the moment is the definition of insanity. We just need a different look, and whether that's Stevenson goes out, or maybe just a straight swap for Stevens or something. I'd like to see a bit of a second tall, I guess, in the forward 50 to free up Larky a bit and just give us a bit of a different look.
Yeah.
Jesse, any different thoughts to those boys?
No, look, I'm pretty in line with that. I just think we need to see a functional forward line. And I think we've just got to bring in some players who we're confident can play. So one of those is Sellers. We've got to give him an absolute run at it. We've got to play a genuine forward line. Happy for you to play Greenwood and two key forwards. I don't want to see Larky in the ruck ever again. I don't know what the point of that was. Well, Greenwood should have been in there, but more. I don't even know why Larky took a single ruck contest, because that's a risk we just can't take. And we've just got to we've got to go back to playing a game style. Absolutely, playing an aggressive game style. We've just got to take the fight and apply the pressure up to Geelong. And the one thing I want to see is a rebound from the midfield. The midfield has to rebound after an embarrassment last week. The pressure is on them to perform, because that is our one wood. That's the strongest area of our ground.
Do you want any changes to the midfield, Jesse?
Look, the one thing I did appreciate about last week, I was very critical the first few weeks around the amount of centre bounce attendances we had had between too few players. So LDU, Powell, Wardlaw, and Tristan Jerry. Yeah, we're getting the bulk of centre bounce attendances, and then you were giving a little bit of time to someone else. I had no issue with McCurch getting some time. Was he as effective as he was? I think it was. I agree with you, Mark. I think it was the wrong game to tempt to try him in there. But we are talking about someone who was a natural born midfielder with an aggressive game style to him. I'd be very open to giving him some wing time. I've got no issue with him playing on the halfback flank, but I think it is a good learning lesson to get him in there. Look, I'm mindful that Sheasel's the only one who can actually get the ball out of 50. But I also think that at some stage, dare I say it, I agree with some of the comments Kane Corns made about wasting him down back. And look, someone made a comment on the weekend. One of the commentators made it, where they go, you know, some people talk about him getting cheap disposals. It was after he saved a goal. He was able to do a really good spoil. And they go, but he actually does the defensive efforts. That's the difference between him and a McKercher. He actually defends. Like, he's actually decent on the spoil, on the, you know, being able to contest a mark and that cheese.
McKercher just doesn't have the strength yet.
No. He doesn't have that. And he probably doesn't have the footy IQ of Sheasel to be able to use that to your advantage, to be able to think ahead of where the ball's going to come, to be able to, you know, plan where the, you know, what the forward's going to do. So
I don't think you can have McKercher, Fisher and Sheasel all playing.
No, it becomes too attacking. I think I said that after round two, that it just becomes too attacking. You need a more defensive player down there.
And Scott on top of that. That's four of them.
Yeah. And that's why I think Scott goes back to a wing. You play two of those players down there. You play a more defensive role. You need a more defensive player down there as well.
You could go McKercher and Scott on the wings, and that would be a good look. That'd be something a bit different.
Yeah, absolutely. Or even you can play McKercher half forward flank, and I'm sure he'd apply more pressure than some of the others are at the moment. Yeah. Plus, he's a good kick. So, look, there's some things they're going to have to try. The one thing that I would hate is just let's go back to this bit of the attitude we're seeing at the moment of, oh, well, this is normal. What's everyone expecting? So let's just go back and do the same stuff we've, you know, been doing before. It just, you can't rinse and repeat rubbish. You've got to hold people accountable. I'm happy to lose and get beaten and stuff, but you have to show fight. And that's what the guys said when it came to, when it came to West Coast and Hawthorn. They both showed real effort, real intent and real heart in the weekend. And I think that hurt
North supporters as much as anything on the weekend.
Oh, it did, because we saw two teams who we think we should be ahead of.
Yeah.
Effort-based stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and really,
West Coast in particular, they were significantly less skilled side than Sydney, and absolutely applied the ultimate pressure on Sydney the whole game.
100%.
And that, as a North supporter, that's what upset me more than anything else over the whole weekend. I was watching that going, why can't we do that exactly what they're doing? And I know they've got some senior players in their side, but that was hard to deal with, I must admit. And then Hawthorn, of course. And I was actually happy after halftime going, oh, well, Essendon got smashed. I hate Essendon. Hawthorn getting smashed. I hate Hawthorn. Could be worse. At least they're in the... And then Hawthorn come back and we go, oh, great. And then it's like... But that was the one positive for the whole weekend. Essendon getting slaughtered. Even if
the trade-off of that was Jason Horne-Francis running around looking like Patrick Dangerfield. I actually watched that a little bit, and I know most North supporters aren't going to agree with me, and that's fine. I actually watch it a bit bittersweet now in terms of... I think you said it well before. It didn't work out well for us. But it is what it is. I think we've moved on. I still find it weird that every time he got the ball, obviously being Gavaran, there was a lot of Victorians over there, would have been a lot of Bombers supporters, but every time he got the ball, he got booed. He did. Every time he got the ball on the weekend, especially in the first half,
That's weird.
There were Victorians booing him, and I still find that bizarre, and I find it weird that a 21-year-old kid is being booed by non-North Melbourne supporters, because I feel like we've moved on from it more than probably most of the others have based
on
that.
We got Wardlaw in their number one draft pick in the year after. Like, there's no need for us to even care about it.
Do I think that he will become an absolutely ridiculously good player? Look, I think I've always maintained that. I think he'll become a very good player. He could be a Brownlow medalist.
He was never going to be a great player for us.
At North Melbourne. Exactly right. There is no point going, look what we've lost, because it just wasn't going to happen here. And you can talk about draft tampering.
Nothing to do with bloody ice baths. The ice bath had nothing to do with it.
It just wasn't going to work. And I actually enjoyed the article that he did. I think it was in The Sun or The Age semi-recently. And he just
Jason Horne-Francis wrote an article.
No. Someone interviewed him and did an article about him.
No,
he doesn't have that. And he pretty much said that just for him, it was just more than anything, it was just the homesickness. And he said, it is what it is. Just move on with it. You got Wardlaw.
Hard to be homesick too much when you never plan to stay. But anyway, that's
a different.
Either way.
I've got over it. I watch it and I go, well done. He's playing well. I just enjoy it like I was watching any other player at this stage.
If you're a North supporter, if you want to be critical of the whole Jason Horne-Francis thing, you should look at the recruiting staff and go, you did not do your due diligence. You should have been able to see this bloke was never going to stay more than two seasons at best case scenario. He wasn't even publicly, when being interviewed, would commit beyond that.
So
the chances of him staying were limited, and you still selected him anyway when there were clubs throwing selections at us. So you stuffed that up.
I blame North, not Jason.
Of course. The club then got away with it because they were able to send him back there, get Wardlaw, get another one pick. We should all be happy. They're happy, we're happy, move on, everyone. Who cares?
Exactly right. So anyway, that was the bittersweet part, but they smashed Essendon, so happy with that.
Well, that was great. That was the highlight of the week.
Well done, Port.
I think we've got more important things to worry about than Jason or Francis leaving, to be honest with you. We won one game in 25, like Frank said earlier. That's all I have for you boys. Mark, want to add anything else before I let you go?
No, I've lost my, I've permanently lost my original handle on X, now it's called. So I'm now North Boss. If you're looking for me,
North.
Well, I did that to try and amuse Bomber Boss, but then he's banned me. He's blocked me now anyway, so I can't even enjoy my banter with him any longer. But so Mark Hallow at 7 is gone. I can't get back in. So I've gone with North Boss, if you're looking for me.
Oh, there you go. So you can give him a follow there. Frank, you've been quiet for about 20 minutes again now. So you want to add anything else before I let you go?
No, dude, no. Hopefully, as we spoke about, we can see a bit of a different look to the side. This Sunday is about all I've been hopeful. So, let's see how we go.
Sounds good. Jesse, anything else before I let you go?
No, look, I think that's about it. We'll crash in for another week, and fingers crossed. Fingers crossed we can be competitive. You never know.
We kind of have to anyway. So
you can always hope.
Yeah,
you better give out the Beyond Blue phone number before we finish up tonight. It's been a bit negative tonight.
Yeah, Mark, I better let you get back to the psychiatrist and go lie down. Take a strong sedative and lie down, my friend. Thanks so much for coming on, Mark.
No worries. Great to chat to you boys as always.
No drama. Frank, always a pleasure. I'm sure I'll chat to you next week.
Thanks, Dean. Thanks, boys.
Jesse, really appreciate you coming on tonight. Thanks for coming on, mate.
Thank you for having me. Thanks, all.
So thank you very much to those boys for coming on once again. We even had a bit of rain come really heavy on Frank's Inn. So we had everything on this podcast, a lot to do with probably the tactics. Are we going a bit easy on players, like I sort of said at the start? So yeah, Mark went on a few rants, but all in a bit of fun. And we're certainly hoping we can turn it around this week. That's it for this episode. Once again, thanks for all the likes, retweets, and comments you all put out for the show. It's much appreciated. I have been getting, I got a few comments last week. I think Mark Versace messaged me on X a couple of times. It was a good conversation. There was a little bit of debate, but not much. Nothing too untoward, but he sort of mentioned that maybe I was going a bit hard, and we were playing good teams, but it was a very civil conversation, and I really appreciated it. So, and I gave him a rebuttal, and he appreciated it as well. So it all went it was all good. And I know a couple other people have sort of commented on Spotify that shouldn't be this negative or anything like that. But I guess, maybe I'm a little frustrated last week. So I appreciate any comments you put out, whether it's positive or negative. Put me back into my place. Very happy with that. Look, more than anything, and I think you listeners would agree with that, that I hope I'm really wrong, that we can turn this around and, we can become a successful football side in the future. That's, we love the North Melbourne Football Club, and we just really want to see them succeed. And, it's a bit heartbreaking and a bit disheartening for, us supporters, and I'll include us and all of you guys, that, it does get a bit tough. And, round four in, and, we're trying to be positive and upbeat, but it can be a bit tough sometimes. So hopefully we can turn it around slowly over the coming weeks. And if we can get through Geelong and put in a competitive performance this Sunday, then we go to next week against Hawthorn. So that's when our season will start. And you never know, we might be half a chance against them. But once again, thanks to all you local listeners for everything you do to make the show happen. And telling your friends about it as well. I really appreciate it. So I'll probably be back on Thursday to preview a game coming against Geelong. There'll be team changes, but there'll be a long interchange as well. So I think it'll be an extended bench because it is a Sunday game. Anyways, that's it for me. Bye for now, and go Roos.